This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, Leading People, Leading Organizations, shrm.org, and by Cargill, Collaborate, Create, Succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers. Stories online at cargillcreates.com. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Which came first, a sliding economy or us telling you about it? Whichever you believe, negative news is clearly having an impact because consumers don't have much hope. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, working to help reduce greenhouse gases with 10 billion transit trips per year at publictransportation.org. And by Cargill, collaborate, create, succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers. Stories online at cargillcreates.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome to the weekend, everybody. It is Friday today, the 15th of February, and it is great to have you with us. Let me say right off the bat that we love to get email from listeners. Good or bad, it's always nice to hear what people think of the program. The other day, we got this from a guy in Las Vegas. Longtime listener, he said, but he's getting sick and tired of us feeding the negative news hysteria about a down economy. That's his quote. Don't just take our word for it, though.
From the White House, an acknowledgement of what many Americans already know. The economy is losing steam.
We are facing the worst financial crunch and crisis since the Great Depression.
Apparently, people just don't like to hear that their homes may be worth a lot less than they think they are, and they may never get to retire.
You might well sum up what we're talking about here with the phrase consumer sentiment. The University of Michigan compiles one of the most well-regarded surveys of exactly that. And this morning, the good folks in Ann Arbor offered up a sobering number, 69.6. That is the February index. We asked Marketplace's John Dimsdale what it really means.
The last time consumers were this depressed was right around the recession of 1992. In fact, the Michigan index has only dropped this low during recessions, including those in the 70s and 80s. Economist Gary Schilling says it isn't the media that are getting consumers down.
They react mainly to their own circumstances, to job availability, to the prospects of a raise or a bonus, to the prospects of being laid off.
Consumer psychology is an important gauge of whether people plan to buy goods and services. And Yale University economist Robert Shiller says people try to talk the economy down and up.
There's a general perception that government leaders and business leaders like to put an optimistic slant on things, because they're aware that confidence is very important for the success of the economy.
After all, Shiller says, it was President Herbert Hoover who said the fundamentals of the economy are sound just before the Great Depression. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
All righty then. Now that you know all about consumer sentiment, try this one on for size. Auction rate securities. Yeah, your first guess is right. It's another slice of the fallout from the subprime mess. It's not that they've gone completely bad, like a lot of things Wall Street's been bundling and selling, but given the history we're dealing with here, you'll understand that a lot of people are wary of anything that smells like subprimes. Marketplace's Bob Moon is here to explain auction rate securities and why they matter, right, Bob?
I hope so. Hi, Kai.
All right. First of all, I guess, what is a bond auction?
Okay, follow along with me on this, if you will, Kai. I've always had trouble turning left across traffic into the parking lot here every morning.
Yeah, okay.
So I want to build a bridge, a ramp, that goes straight into the parking lot.
Okay.
And here's how I plan to pay for it. I'm going to give you and the rest of the staff here at Marketplace an IOU, and I'll even pay you some interest on the money that each of you loaned me to build this bridge.
All right, what's the rate going to be?
Okay, here's the great thing. Every few weeks, we're going to hold an auction, and we're going to round up all these IOUs, and based on the demand for these IOUs, we'll set interest rates. The good thing about this is you're going to be able to earn some quick money on that interest, but if you want to get out of this, you can sell your IOU at the next auction, so your investment's going to be extremely liquid. It's almost like cash, and you can invest and get some decent interest, but you can turn right around the next time we auction these things off and find somebody to take it off your hands.
You're going to give me a guarantee now that I can get my money out of whatever this scheme is, right?
Yeah. I've got somebody who's going to write up insurance on these promissory notes, and don't worry about the fact that my insurance guy has been losing a little money here on these mortgage foreclosures
lately.
Yeah,
all right. You know what?
Never mind that. They're going to insure this. I've got good credit.
Yeah, and there's a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you. I'm not coming to your auction, Bob.
Well, that's the problem. These things called auction rate securities are basically the IOUs that help raise money for everything from roads and bridges to hospitals, universities, museums, even student loans. And this idea of holding auctions and reselling these bonds every few weeks has really been an attractive proposition for wealthy investors and corporations when they want to make some money on their big cash reserves, but they don't want to tie it up in some long-term investment.
All right. I fail to see what the problem is then in real world, not in your ramp scheme here.
Well, we've been talking for a while now about those big companies that insure these bonds,
right,
suffering big losses on all those bad mortgages. Well, that spooked a lot of people, and this week not enough investors have been showing up at these bond auctions where in the past the banks would maybe step in and make good on it. Well, as we know, the banks have their own problems.
Yeah, they do. Make this real for me, though. Why does it matter?
Well, your city might become the next victim of this because when these auctions fail, there's a higher penalty rate that kicks in for investors left holding the bond, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's caused short-term borrowing rates to explode for all kinds of public works projects. Take the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, for example. A week ago, it was paying around 4% on $100 million in bonds that it issued. Well, this week, it's now being forced to pay almost quadruple that rate, 20%. Now, of course, this is when a lot of municipalities are seeing tax collections plunge with all these foreclosures. So if you're talking about a hospital, for example, you're talking about pressure on health care costs. If you're talking about student loans, there'll be interest rate pressure. There are a lot of dominoes here that directly affect what we could all end up paying.
All right, let's get to the big domino, though, and that's the housing market. How does this tie back into the root of all evil here?
Well, that's where it all began. That's the first domino, and now we've got this fear and greed tug-of-war going on. There are some signs that investors might be drawn back into the bond market now, this auction bond market, by the higher penalty rates. And you also have to remember that these are still considered very solid investments. Good credit with these municipalities. It's largely a psychological problem that we have to get over.
And we find one every day, it seems, in this whole mess. Marketplace's senior business correspondent, Bob Moon. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Kai.
Let me get back to all the negative news about the economy for a second. It's not just electronic media doing the reporting, you know. Newspaper business pages aren't exactly full of cheer either. Then again, neither is the newspaper business. News has been moving online and taking advertisers with it. This week, the Tribune Company, which owns the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune, said it's cutting 2% of its workforce. The New York Times is showing 100 newsroom employees the door. But today, four of this country's top newspaper companies, including Times and Tribune, learned to stop worrying and love the internet. They've gotten together and thrown their lot in with an online ad company called Quadrant One, as Marketplace's Dan Gretsch explains.
Quadrant One will give advertisers a single place to buy ads in more than 100 newspaper websites owned by Gannett, Tribune, Hearst, and the New York Times Company. The main websites for the New York Times and Gannett's USA Today aren't included in the deal. Still, Quadrant One includes websites in 27 of the top 30 markets. Rick Edmonds is a media business analyst at the nonprofit Poynter Institute.
Newspapers do need the leverage of something big and of working together to get the industry competitive in this particular arena.
Newspapers are competing for the online ad dollar with internet powerhouses Google, AOL, and Microsoft. Yahoo created a similar consortium to direct ads to newspaper websites last year, though many big newspaper chains didn't take part. Jeff Gregory is CEO of marketing firm Brand Counsel. He says so far newspapers haven't done well online, and this deal may be too little, too late.
I'm not sure if they've just decided to get all four of the deck chairs on the Titanic in the same place, or if they really can keep things afloat.
Newspapers across the country are placing a new emphasis on their internet business. The Los Angeles Times and the Sacramento Bee recently hired editors because of their web expertise. Craig Foreman's an executive vice president at internet provider Earthlink. He says don't count out newspaper companies yet.
Newspapers have access to proprietary local content that's very hard for online companies to create themselves, and they have brands that really resonate in local markets.
I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Investors limped across the finish line today. We'll have the details and the whole darn week on Wall Street when we do the numbers. If trying to figure out auction rate securities took you back to the halcyon days before anybody had ever heard of CDOs, here's another blast from the past. America's biggest mortgage lender Countrywide said today foreclosures and late payments are still hitting new records. A good many of those foreclosures are homeowners trying to pay down adjustable rate mortgages, ARMs they're called, the loans that almost everybody is worried about. Because a wave of ARM interest rate resets is looming in the next 18 months that could drag the housing market down even deeper. From WCPN in Cleveland, Mari Saito has the story of a family on the leading edge of that wave.
John and Vicki Glicken spent years working to improve their credit so they could get a loan for a house. John is a building maintenance man. Vicki is an administrative assistant. They managed to pay off their debts and fix their credit report. In 2005, they paid $183,000 for their first home. It's a ranch house in Lyndhurst, Ohio, a quiet, middle-class suburb of Cleveland.
And we have a fence in the backyard, you know, the American dream. The two dogs.
It's not a picket fence, but it's a fence. So. And it's ours for now, so...
The couple got a zero-down, interest-only, adjustable-rate mortgage from First Franklin, a subprime unit then owned by National City Bank. They planned to refinance a year later, but then John lost his job. Vicki took a second job. John couldn't find work for 9 months, but they kept up their mortgage payments.
I cashed in a 401k. We've exhausted our savings. The record's there of lump sum payments.
At the same time, the interest rate on their mortgage went from 7.25% to 10.25%. No one wanted to refinance their loan. Home prices were tumbling, and they couldn't sell their home for what they borrowed. They filed for bankruptcy protection last October. Now John and Vicki sit at their kitchen table with a new letter from their lender saying their interest rate is going up again on March 1st. Their mortgage will be $1,694 a month. And that doesn't include taxes or insurance.
We were naive in a lot of areas.
Sure.
And we take responsibility for that. We went through a counseling session as part of your Chapter 13, and it requires you to come up with a budget. We're trying to follow the steps, and this just keeps going up and up and up.
The Glickens' lawyer, Richard Nemeth, says bills now in Congress might help his clients. The legislation would let bankruptcy judges recast the terms of mortgages.
What this would help folks do is, you know, get out from these products that they're unable to pay because they have adjustable rate provisions in them that require them to pay higher and higher installments.
But lenders say that bankruptcy reform won't help the country out of the subprime crisis. The Mortgage Bankers Association's Steve O'Connor says the legislation will only cause more problems later.
What you're allowing a judge to do under the proposed legislation is to unilaterally and retroactively alter mortgage contracts. And so going forward, investors will take that into account, and they'll price in a risk premium to account for that. And that will ultimately increase costs for all borrowers.
The Glickens have asked their loan servicer, now owned by Merrill Lynch, to put them in a fixed-rate mortgage. It cost them $425 to file the request. They also have more legal fees ahead. Deutsche Bank manages the Wall Street Trust, now holding their loan. It's asking a federal court to stop bankruptcy proceedings so the bank can foreclose on their house. The Glickens realized how tight money was when their 14-year-old son recently asked for $150 to go to summer school.
We're not making choices about, you know, should we go up to the casinos for the weekend? Or we're making a choice about whether or not our son can go to summer school so he can take, you know, an extra elective class. How do you say no to him? You know, so we don't want to be in a position where everything is going just to the house.
Which is what it's been the last year and a half.
And it hasn't been enough.
So while the Glickens hope for help from their lender, Vicki is looking for rental properties that will take them, even with their newly tarnished credit, just in case they go into foreclosure. In Cleveland, I'm Mari Saito for Marketplace.
We've been talking a lot on the program about problems facing the economy and some possible solutions. That discussion is happening online, too. Head to our website. It's marketplace.org and click on Your Economy. Time to check the week on Wall Street with stockbroker and business analyst David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Welcome home, I guess.
Nice to be back. I put in a three-day week after getting back from seeing just how really rotten the U.S. dollar is abroad. And I'm happy to say we crawled out of this day with our heads. You look at the data coming into trading this morning,
mm-hmm.
and the lowest consumer confidence in whatever it was, 15 years,
yep.
and this negative Empire Manufacturing Survey, and here's Best Buy. My goodness, people buy flat screen TVs, and Best Buy warns about earnings. I can't believe there were only about 400 more stocks down than up today.
So how you feeling, though? I mean, just in a general zeitgeist kind of way.
You know what happened? And quite seriously, I was gone almost 2 weeks. And I come back here, and I almost didn't recognize, and I still don't recognize some of the terrain around here. Nobody trusts anybody. This is a business that, to the greatest degree, is predicated on trust. But here, nobody trusts anybody. And if you're Ben Bernanke, you could take interest rates to 1%. But by golly, if I don't think you're going to pay the money back, I'm not going to loan it to you.
But hold on, because why, frankly, in this environment should anybody trust anybody? Because there is so much unknown out there that if you trust anybody, you just expose yourself.
And I understand that. And this is the dilemma. And this is exactly the uncertainty that you feel in the marketplace. I mean, ultimately, you have to. You can't do business this way. Why would anybody, you know, put out a 30-year mortgage? I mean, why would I loan you money for 30 years? I mean, you could get hit by a truck. You could just lose interest. You just walk off and, you know, wake up and you're in Oregon or something. And I get stiffed for my money.
Yeah, well, this is all very kumbaya and all, but how do we get back? I mean, now the trust has been broken, and I don't think anybody's going to disagree, right? Because you had people lying and cheating and stealing practically all over the place. How do you get the trust back?
I don't know. I think you just earn it. It sort of comes back very slowly, and we know what happens. We've seen the pendulum swing back and forth. They're going to be screaming on Capitol Hill. They're going to kick out all the baseball players, and they're going to start talking about, you know, credit quality and accountability, and then we'll end up with a new Sarbanes-Oxley or whatever. But ultimately, you just have to regain the trust, and that's got to happen sooner or later. You can't have commerce. And so with that background, can you believe that, you know, we had the week that we had this week and a market as good as we had today? I think it's a very encouraging sign.
So you'll be stepping up to be the first then to trust, right?
I don't know. You know, you already owe me a lot of money.
Yeah, well, that's probably true. David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas, if he's to be trusted. David, we'll see you later.
Kai, we've got a three-day weekend coming
up. Yes, we do.
And you remember what happened the last time we had a three-day
weekend? Yeah, well. Wait, remind me, what?
Societe Generale.
Oh, Societe Generale, that's right. Anyway, coming up, the ugly business of beautiful art.
Right, that embarrasses them. And, money is crass and art is about truth and beauty. Art has always been about money. And that's just a fact.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials lost 28 points on this Friday, 0.2% to finish at 12,348. The Nasdaq fell 10 points, 0.4% to close at 2321. The S&P 500 notched up 1 point, closing basically flat at 1349. For the week, the Dow rose 1.3%. The Nasdaq perked up 0.75%. The S&P 500 lifted 1.4%. Johnson mentioned Best Buy. Circuit City lopped off 5%. Radio Shack lost 1.75%. A couple of economic bell
Bellwethers felt the consumer chill. Caterpillar inched down 0.7%. United Technology, makers of everything from elevators to helicopters, gave up 1.5%. The 10-year T-note rose. The yield fell to 3.76%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 888-VANGUARD. By Constellation Energy, working to provide responsible, sustainable energy to power America's future. Constellation Energy, the way energy works. And by Siemens, from strengthened urban infrastructures to sustainable environmental solutions to advanced healthcare technology, Siemens' 70,000 U.S. employees are providing solutions for America. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at events coming up Monday, President's Day. Wall Street takes a holiday. Markets are closed. President Bush continues his six-day trip to Africa with a stop in Tanzania. And Planet X was discovered on February 18, 1930. Once thought to be the farthest planet from the sun, the object now known as Pluto has been reclassified as a dwarf planet. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. President Bush leaves for Africa later this afternoon. 6 days, five countries. The White House says the trip will highlight health care, economic opportunity, and human rights. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will spin off on Monday for a stop in Kenya to talk about the violence there. And there is another item on the president's agenda. He's trying to drum up support for a new U.S. military command based on the continent. But Gretchen Wilson reports that is proving to be a tough sell.
President Bush made a speech yesterday saying Africa in the 21st century is a continent of potential.
Africa is also increasingly vital to our strategic interests.
A year ago, Bush centralized the U.S. military's African operations, including peacekeeping and anti-terrorism training. The new headquarters is called U.S. Africa Command, or AFRICOM. Colonel Pat Mackin says AFRICOM coordinates the training of local security forces in maritime and border security.
Things like oil theft and piracy and illegal fishing. If these African governments can get a handle on being able to protect their waters or their natural resources, then they're able to bring those resources to market.
But here in Africa, many worry it's American economic interests that are really at stake. The U.S. is expected to get 25% of its oil from Africa in the next decade. Dean Peter Baker is the editor of African Security Review.
The timing of AFRICOM has made a lot of people suspicious that this is also part of a U.S. interest in trying to get control of particularly oil resources in Africa.
Other external players, including China and India, are positioning for access to Africa's resources. Adam Habib is a political scientist with the University of Johannesburg. He says African leaders worry AFRICOM will enforce Washington's policies rather than promote Africa's best interests.
And the big concern of the African continent, and it's particularly my concern, frankly, is that the last time we had a scramble on the African continent in the Cold War between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, really Africa lost out.
African resistance to the military headquarters is so great that only the small nation of Liberia has publicly offered to host it. Liberia is one of the stops on this trip. The White House says AFRICOM will be on the agenda during Bush's visit, but no major announcements are expected. AFRICOM says it won't infringe on the sovereignty of other nations. Officials say the headquarters will be fully up and running by October. For now, it'll operate from its current base in Stuttgart, Germany. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
There's a big cultural happening here in L.A. tomorrow. The new Broad Contemporary Art Museum opens at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. That's Broad as in Eli Broad, billionaire real estate baron, philanthropist, and world-recognized art collector. His name's on the building and his signature's on the $56 million check that built it, so it should follow that Broad's art would be calling the place home. But Andrea Gardner explains there is a temporary side to this new museum of contemporary art.
This is how it usually works. Wealthy art collectors amass huge collections and eventually donate them to museums. This is how it was supposed to work with Los Angeles billionaire Eli Broad, his spectacular contemporary art collection, and the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. After all, Broad has been involved with the museum for decades. But he stunned the art world recently with the news that he wasn't going to donate his collection to the LA Museum after all. He was going to hold on to it and lend it out instead. Broad says he wants to make sure his Andy Warhol paintings and Jeff Koons sculptures are seen, not sitting in museum storage. He also says that because he pays to insure and preserve the art, his way makes financial sense for museums.
The price of the work has gone up dramatically, which means the cost of insurance as a result of 9/11 and the higher value of the art has gone up dramatically. So I think that art museums are far better off with our paradigm than doing what they've historically done.
Nicholas Forrest, an analyst and writer, says Broad has a point. Prices have skyrocketed as newly rich collectors from China, Russia, and India have unleashed their fortunes on the art market. These days, many museums can't afford to compete with individual buyers.
Just buying within their budget is not really an option because the best artworks are going to collectors who have the money to purchase them. So the galleries and museums are needing to change the way they approach obtaining an artwork.
Museums and rich collectors have a long history of mutual self-interest. Collectors depend on museums to display their private collections and add to the collector's prestige. Museums depend on collectors for permanent donations. They often court donors for years in hopes of receiving these gifts, offering them seats on their governing boards and a voice in museum affairs. If Broad's loaning model catches on, museums will have to woo collectors for mere loans. And some experts say that will give rich collectors even more power. But art economist David Gallinson from the University of Chicago says collectors have always had the upper hand because they've always had the money. That's something people in the art community don't like to talk about.
Right, that embarrasses them. And, money is crass and art is about truth and beauty. Art has always been about money, and that's just a fact.
But if more collectors become loaners instead of donors, Gallinson believes a new power struggle will emerge as the playing field is leveled between well-to-do museums and modest ones.
It will put more pressure on museums to be more entrepreneurial. Poor museums, those who have weak permanent collections, can get access to important art by this kind of lending library approach, and as a result, they can challenge richer museums.
That means more art is on display, which ultimately means more people around the world will get to see it. In Los Angeles, I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, Hormel Foods posted a higher-than-expected profit today, more than $88 million. As we've told you, food costs have been going up. Still, Hormel reported higher sales in many of its ready-made products geared to the cost-conscious. Items like microwavable chili and Spam. They've even got Spam singles now. Not that everybody loves them.
I don't like Spam!
Spam, 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 Spam.
Monty Python, about 1970 or so. Haven't heard that in forever. And that is Marketplace on this Friday afternoon from American Public Media. Today, the Dow fell 28 points, 0.2%. The NASDAQ lost 10 points, 0.4%. The S&P 500 rose 1 point. We'll call that flat. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer of the program is a guy named J.J. Yore. Coming up on Monday, 20-somethings grow facial hair for a good cause.
It looked like if you were to wet your lip and put dried cocoa powder on it, that brown crust look, not so attractive.
Yeah, no. I'm Kai Rizdal. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.